Four Strange Stories UK here again for Series 7, Episode 20. This murder case is from Bournemouth during 2023. The case came to Winchester Crown Court this month on April the 11th, 2024. And it is expected to finish sometime in late May 2024. More likely early June. So no verdict as the podcast is posted after a week of the trial. Well, not sure how to describe this one in a line or two. Gregarious extrovert couple with addiction and mental health problems commit an atrocious act. The trial is live, so please follow it in the media. I don't think I'll post another podcast on this case unless something particularly strange or unusual occurs. The next couple of podcasts that I post will be a little lighter, non-murder cases, perhaps a paranormal. I'm thinking about posting a Beatles case about Bag One. And also, I'm aware I haven't posted a cryptozoology case in a while. I tried to put the microphone outside for a few moments just now because there's nightingales singing, but they weren't picking up so well. Anyhow, this case is about Simon Shotton murder in Bournemouth. The case comes from Boscombe, an area of Bournemouth on the south coast of the UK. Boscombe flourished when the British people holidayed in the UK. Boscombe was a popular resort with huge sandy beaches in one of the south coast's wealthiest areas, with top-class hotels and many large Victorian and Edwardian family houses with large gardens next to the New Forest. After World War II, in the late 40s to the late 60s, there was a boom in seaside holiday market, and Boscombe, with its large number of smaller guest houses, profited from a period of prosperity. However, then came an era of rapid decline. Foreign holidays became affordable, and many of the guest houses and hotels became let out to unemployed people from around the country during the 1970s economic depression. The youth of Northern England preferred to be unemployed in the sunny south, next to the beach, rather than in their hometowns. And who could blame them? So lots of young people away from their family restraints and influence. What could possibly go wrong? Boscombe was on a rapid decline. It was attracting vulnerable people, people on low incomes, people on benefits. And this saw the beginnings of the drug-using community in the area. There were later attempts to restore the area. Parts of the high street were pedestrianised. The Sovereign Shopping Centre was opened. And there were popular areas and venues. The Clifftop Gardens were spectacular, but the slow decline continued. In 2006, there was an attempt to turn part of the seafront into a trendy surfing centre by making an artificial reef. This was a failure, but part of the coastal area was refurbished and money was spent on the gardens. The area has huge potential, but there were huge social problems in the streets back from the clifftops. I remember the last time I was in Bournemouth for an evening, about 10 years ago. I was told that I was barred from a city centre public house because I complained about my pint of ale being served in a plastic beaker instead of a pint glass. I later learnt that all the public houses had to serve in plastic due to violent incidents in the town centre. Well, there are steep, free zigzag paths leading from the clifftops to the beach in Bournemouth. And it was at the Manor Steps zigzag path at Boscombe on a wet August Saturday, the 28th of August, that Diana Burton, working for an events company on the Bournemouth seafront, handing out leaflets about a forthcoming event, was sitting on a bench, sheltering in the rain. It was just after midday when she heard something loud land with a thump next to her. She described it as a large package with a rotting smell, which had fallen down the cliff, probably dislodged by recent heavy rain from a steep cliff top. A closer examination of the package by a passing policeman found it contained a leg and a foot. a human leg and a human foot. So the police were called. The police cordoned off the area, they cordoned off the path and the Boscombe Cliff Gardens, while a specialist search team and dogs searched the area. Sergeant Jennifer Hussey was trying to identify where the package had fallen from, and she went to the area above the bench. She climbed over a fence and went into thick undergrowth and found a similar package with similar contents. A pathologist conducted a post-mortem of both legs on the 31st of August 2023, and DNA samples taken identified them as belonging to a man named Simon Shotton. The amputations removed at mid-thigh were amateur and indicated to her that they had not been done by somebody with any medical training. Simon Shotton had made the local press in Ipswich during April 2019. Police had gone to his home in Woodbridge Road, Ipswich, and found almost 200 wraps of heroin and crack. Shotton had told the police that his home had been cuckooed by Country Lines drug dealers to sell drugs in Ipswich. Shotton admitted that to dealing and was given a suspended jail sentence for 2 years and a 12-month rehabilitation order, which is a drug addiction treatment accompanied by regular drug testing. He also had to do 100 hours unpaid work. I'm not sure if this was ever completed, as 50% of such orders are never finished. Police went back to Shotton's home for a surprise visit during August 2019 and found wraps of heroin and cocaine, which caused him to be imprisoned. He was sentenced to 3 years and a month for offences including possession with intent to supply Class A drugs, heroin and crack cocaine, and also having a bladed article in a public place, which I assume was a knife. Shotton was released on licence from prison in September 2022. He was now 47 years of age. He moved to Bournemouth, as he was in danger in the Ipswich area, owing £10,000 drug debts, and there had been threats made to him. In Bournemouth, he was under the supervision by the probation services with Miss Watson. She was Shotton's probation officer. When she needed to see him, she would send a text message on a SIM card provided by the probation service. The probation service was able to give the police the telephone SIM card number and the last notified address, which was a derelict B&B called Monrepos Hotel in Manor Road, Boscombe, where Mr. Shotton had told his probation officer that he was employed there to stay at the hotel, or the B&B, to deter squatters. This wasn't strictly true, as Shotton was a squatter himself, but he was tolerated by the owner until he was told to move on. When the police learnt this, they cordoned off the bed and breakfast hotel for a search. Shotton's phone had a number of texts to somebody called Raf Kransky. The later text asking for help in moving out of an address at Aylesbury Road, Boscombe, on the 18th of August 2023. Raf had texted back Shotton at 6 minutes past eight on the 18th of August, telling him he was on his way, and Shotton responded with a thumbs up text. Raf left Southampton and drove to Aylesbury Road, Boscombe. When he arrived, he sent a text message to say that he was outside. This was at 8:24. But Raf didn't get any further response from Shotton, and he could not knock at the door of the house because he did not know the house number in Aylesbury Road. There were no more text messages from Shotton, leading the police to later conclude that Shotton was murdered between 6 minutes past 8 and 24 minutes past 8 on the morning of the 18th of August 2023. Raff was part of the same Boscombe drugs gang that Shotton was working for. Shotton had told Raff that he was in trouble with Atkins while at the house. Raf Kransky had to be careful not to incriminate himself when speaking to the police. He told them that Shotton had drugs and money stolen from him by Atkins. In response, Shotton cut the power cables to Atkins' television. Shotton said that Atkins was a scumbag, C-U-N-T, They clearly hated each other by mid-August 2023. The police seemed to think that Shotton had been staying with Atkins and Pereira to deal drugs in the Boscombe area. He had enlisted Atkins' help in selling drugs, but Atkins was not giving Shotton the money he was receiving for drugs. This was causing the trouble between them. Police had now established that Mr. Shotton had recently been living at the address in Aylesbury Road, and further investigations took them to 18B Aylesbury Road, the home of Debbie Ann Pereira, who was aged 39, or 38 at the time, and her boyfriend Benjamin Lee Atkins, who then was aged 48. The couple had been in a relationship for 18 months, and Atkins had lived with at Aylesbury Road for over a year. She had been living there for a couple of years. Pereira was an attractive brunette from Johannesburg, South Africa, who seemed very concerned with her appearance. She was mother to a girl and a boy, Jack and Jasmine, who were not living with her. She had a criminal record that started in her late 20s. She had 9 convictions for shoplifting, all within a couple of years, which were probably the result of her becoming an intravenous drug user for a couple of years before getting clean. Pereira was heavily tattooed, possibly hiding drug track lines on her neck and on her arms. Benjamin Atkins was 10 years older than Pereira and had a long criminal record going back to when he was 16 years of age, when he attempted an armed robbery. Since then, he had a long record which included drugs and violence. Atkins claimed to be a carpenter and an artist. Before Atkins moved in with Pereira, neighbours at Aylesbury Road described her as happy and outgoing. But after Atkins moved in, neighbours described her as becoming thin and pale. Her voice was weaker, and she seemed less grounded and vulnerable. It was thought she'd started taking drugs again after the arrival of Atkins. There was another partner of Pereira that had got her addicted in the past. Police obtained other call data in relation to the telephone numbers that had been assigned to Mr. Shotton. That showed that the last phone call made on Shotton's phone call was at 5:25 p.m. on August the 18th to a landline, a branch of Cash Creators in Boscombe. So this was 5:25 p.m. after police thought he'd been murdered. Police inquiries show that on the same day Mr. Shotton's number had called Cash Creators, Debbie Pereira had bought Shotton's iPhone into the shop in exchange for cash. She had sold it for £15. The iPhone was still in the shop. When police checked it, they found the unique IMEI number of the handset that matched the data records that they had for Mr. Shotton's telephone, so they knew that it was definitely his phone. CCTV at Cash Creator showed Pereira, along with a man who was later identified as Benjamin Atkins. They were frequent visitors to the shop. Police were told that their address, 18B Aylesbury Road, and they went to arrest the couple. 18 Aylesbury Road in Boscombe was a semi-detached house in Boscombe, divided into 2 flats per floor, so there were 4 flats in total. Pereira and Atkins lived in flat B, which was the rear of the house, on the first floor, on the ground floor, I beg your pardon, benefiting from a private garden. And they were arrested at 9 p.m. on Friday the 1st of September. When the police called at the flat, Pereira was in the living room. She was informed that she was being arrested on suspicion of murder and cautioned. PC Labouchedarere searched the only bedroom in the flat before entering the front living room, where Pereira had already been detained by another officer. He asked Pereira if she needed anything, any medication, when she went to custody, and she said she needed her methadone. She was then asked whether anybody else was in the address, and she said that she was alone. She was asked then if anybody else lived with her. She said she had a boyfriend that visited occasionally. Police went into the garden and discovered Atkins, who was her boyfriend, hiding in the garden behind a wheelbarrow, and he was arrested. The following day, September the 2nd, there was a detailed forensic examination of the garden of Flat B, 18 Elsby Road. Two black bins were found underneath a wheelbarrow where Atkins had been hiding, and these black bins contained seven arms, both of them cut off in the middle of the upper arm. There was also evidence of extensive blood staining, especially in a room called the utility room, which had a recent paint over. Forensics said that there had been blood on the walls, which had been washed off, and the walls painted over. Blood staining had been found elsewhere in the flat and on clothing, although there had been a determined effort to clean it away with bleach and other cleaning products. A screwdriver had been found in the lounge of the flat with blood staining, which police thought could have been a weapon. Pereira and Atkins were interviewed at Bournemouth Police Station. Benjamin Atkins gave no comment answers to all questions. Pereira was quite talkative, but she gave several accounts. In a first interview on September the 2nd, she'd said that she'd known Shotton since late spring. She knew that he dealt in crack and heroin, and described him as a bog-standard user. She described him as average male height, quite slim, blonde, short hair, missing teeth. He had a piercing on his ears, he had tattoos on his arms, and he had one on his fingers. She said that Shotton had visited their home to take drugs with them, and that he had left his phone at their flat and not come back for it, so she decided to sell it. She said that she knew Shotton as Rio, who worked for a heroin and crack dealer in Boscombe. She claimed to be agoraphobic and didn't go out very much. Pereira said that her and Atkins had got this thing that they didn't use drugs for ages, but when they got a good deal on drugs, they would use. So when Shotton said that he would give them a supply if he could stay at their place, she thought that was a good deal and a good excuse to take drugs. She said that she did not know that Shotton was an intravenous user, and that scared her, as she used to inject into her neck, and she was still tempted to do that. The police said that the couple seemed to have an ongoing financial issue. Pereira answered that that was only minor, because they had love, and she really fucking loved him. Pereira was then asked what she knew about Ref Kraninski. She said that he was a drug dealer that she'd bought from. He was a bald-headed Polish man, quite a big build, nice watch, chain. He was a speed freak, always shouting Polish into his phone. She met him the first time she met Shotton. Pereira then answered questions about her agoraphobia, which she said that she said she'd had bad recently as the anniversary of the death of one of her stillborn twins. Pereira was the mother and a daughter of a son that originally come from Johannesburg, South Africa, but she'd lived in Paul in Bournemouth area for some years. She then began talking about her partner, Ben Atkins. She said he'd been burning stuff for the past 5 days in the garden, and he got cuts on his fingers. She said that Atkins was clearing the garden to make it look nice, so they could stay in a tent in the garden. Pereira was asked about Atkins' mental health, and she said that Atkins was the paranoid schizophrenic. She said that he'd been convicted of a robbery when he was younger in Oxford, but since that time he'd been baptised in formal water, whatever that is, and that cleared him of any sin. He was talking about God, what God wanted him to do, and she said that he spoke a lot of weird stuff. She said that Atkins was getting help from a charity, the We Are With You charity, giving free confidential support to people experience issues with drugs, alcohol or mental health. She said that she had no idea that Simon Shotton had been killed and knew nothing about it. In her second interview on the same day as her first, she was told by police that Shotton's arms had been found in the garden of the flat, her flat. She then told police that Shotton had stayed with them for a couple of nights at the flat, and then in a tent in the garden. She said that Benny, Atkins, had been burning something in the garden, but she did not know what it was, and she had not been with him whilst he was doing it. The story that she told during this interview to the police was that the last time she remembered seeing Shotton was when all three of them had been taking drugs, after which she had gone to bed. Atkins remained watching television in the living room, and Shotton had gone into the tent into the garden. When she awoke the next day, she said Shotton and all his belongings had gone. She noticed that the fire pit in the garden had been used overnight, but wasn't still burning. During the next day, she said she saw Atkins sawing wood in the garden and the fire pit burning. She had noticed Atkins had bought large black bin liners, bleach and silver tape on the same day that they'd taken the mobile telephone to Cash Creators on the 18th of August. The police were still searching for the rest of Shotton's body, and they needed more time to question Atkins and Pereira, who were taken to a local magistrate's court for an application to be made for an extension for their arrest. Atkins and Pereira were placed in the same van to be transported. The police had concealed a listening device. This was the first time they'd been together since their arrest. The conversation was difficult to make out, but included Atkins asking Pereira if she knew why the police had gone into the garden when he was arrested. She asked him if he had the legs in the garden. Atkins replied that he'd gone in the garden to get rid of the fucking arms. Then he started laughing, which obscured what Pereira was saying. Later, Atkins tells her to play the story out until the end. Pereira asked Atkins if he regretted anything. He replied that he would look them straight in the eye and do it again and again and again. And if he gets free today, he'll find another one, another drug dealer, and kill, decapitate, and eat the fucker. Atkins was heard telling Pereira, "They can't give you a proper interview whilst you're withdrawing from methadone." While the couple were in the van, the speech was not very audible due to the sound of the van travelling, but what was audible was the sound of the couple breaking wind, which was explained as a combination of drug withdrawal and the side effects of the medication that they were on. Pereira told Atkins that the police had taken stuff from under her nails, to which he replied she had nothing there because she'd used so much bleach. Then he advised her to answer no comment to all further questions. Atkins told Pereira that he asked his solicitor that if he admitted that he did the murder, if he admitted that he cooked Simon's head up in Etta's cheeks, would it get Pereira off the hook? But his solicitor said she would still be charged. So Atkins said he was going to admit everything in the big court. I'll take that to be Crown Court. And Pereira should just answer no comment to everything. Pereira then also told the police that Atkins had said God told him to get rid of all drug dealers. They're all evil. I'm assuming that Atkins was saying that he ate Shotton's cheek to try to show that he was mad when he committed the murder. Police asked Pereira if she thought that was something that Atkins might have done, or just something he said. She replied that she didn't know, because he'd said so much weird stuff. Meanwhile, the police had made contact with Donna Maguire, a friend that Shotton had made when he arrived in Boscombe. Her number was one of the last called by Shotton, late on August 17th, 2023. He was asking her if he could stay with her for a few days, as he was so stressful where he was living at Aylesbury Road. He told Donna that he wanted to smash Atkins' face in, as he was being blackmailed by him, the vindictive two-faced Atkins. He said that he supplied them both with two wraps every day. Pereira says thank you, but Atkins never does. He's a C-U-N-T to everyone, including Pereira. The call was said to be made out of the blue. Donna said that she agreed he could stay for a few days, coming to her on the next day, on the 18th of August, but of course he never showed up. In Pereira's third interview on September the 3rd, after the magistrates extended the time that the police had to question the defendants, she began to answer no comment to the questions, but then said she wanted a meeting with her legal representative. After this, she then told the police that she'd spoken to Atkins in the police van on the way to the magistrates, and told the police that Atkins had said to her that he told his solicitor that if he admitted everything, it would get her off the hook. She claimed that Atkins had admitted to her that he'd killed Shotton and God had told him to do it. But none of this audio had been captured in the van by the police. Pereira went on to say that Mr. Shotton had stayed at 18B Ellsbury Road for 2 weeks prior to his death, and that he would work from 8 to 9 in the morning until 8 or 9 in the evening selling drugs. The drug gang he was working for was working him very hard. Pereira said that Atkins did not like Mr. Shotton. Mr. Atkins felt he was not giving them enough drugs for allowing him to stay. Well, this was a story being told by Pereira, but a story which kept changing. Pereira told the police that the last time she'd seen Shotton, Atkins had begun to shout at him for not giving them enough drugs. She claimed that she pulled Atkins away and they'd gone into the bedroom together. When she woke the next day at 11 a.m, Shotton and all his belongings that had been in the bag in the living room had gone. Atkins was in the garden, burning stuff. Pereira denied having any role in Shotton's death and his dismembering or the concealment of his body. When asked about the items he'd bought with Atkins, Pereira said that bin liners were to clear up the garden, tape so he could decorate the utility room, and bleach and disinfectant because she liked to put it in her washing. The bleach and disinfectant was for her. She claimed she had OCD. She bathed in bleach. She cleaned herself with the bleach. Pereira said that she never looked in the utility room because Atkins wanted the decorating he was doing there to be a surprise for her. Pereira was then showed by the police during the interview CCTV at 9:38 in the morning on the 18th near her home. Atkins is showing a bin bag or sack. When he's asked what he's doing, Pereira says, "I don't want to know." The detective constable Burley, who is interviewing her, says to her, "You do know, though. That's the problem." DC Burley then asks about the text Shotton had sent Atkins just before 7 a.m. on the 18th of August, as Ben Atkins and Pereira were making their way home. The text said, "Ben, I'm telling you now, you best have my money when you get home, or W." DC Burley said to Pereira that they, the police, had the idea that Benny Atkins was dealing for Shotton and keeping the money, and they'd both been ripping Shotton off for drugs, building up a debt with him. Atkins had come home, they'd had an argument over money and their relationship, your stealing of the drugs, taking advantage of Shotton, and he'd been killed. The police said to Pereira, "You were in the flat when that happened. Then you spent 2 and a bit weeks storing his body, while his body's been cut up and dumped around the neighbourhood." DC Burley continued, "Simon's remains have been in your flat for over 2 weeks. You've told us you've not been going into the garden." Pereira answers, "Yeah, because Benny's been burning stuff." DC Burley says, "Yeah, and you told us why you've not been going into the utility room." Pereira says, "Yeah, because Bunny wanted to keep it as a surprise." Pereira then told the police that when Benny drinks, he cannot be very nice. Pereira is told by the police that she's changed her story several times and they can't really believe what she tells them now. The next development was on September the 6th in Boscombe Chine Gardens. A police officer discovered a black wheelie suitcase in a hedgerow, covered in flies and maggots. Inside was Mr. Shotton's headless torso. Dr. Deborah Cook carried out the post-mortem examination of all the body parts found, and her assessment was that Mr. Shotton's limbs and head had been cut off with a saw by an amateur after his death. Mr. Shotton had also had injuries to his wrists and hands, consistent with being defensive in nature, and multiple small puncture wounds around his shoulder blades. The torso had been stabbed about 12 times with a small, sharp object in the back. Injuries to Mr. Shotton's wrists and hands were said to be defensive in nature. Police examined CCTV cameras in the area of Ellsbury Road. One clip shows Atkins and Pereira going along Christchurch Road towards their home at 6:57 a.m. on the 18th of August. Atkins was wheeling a wheelbarrow and is using a phone that's passed to him by Pereira. This is consistent with the call data from Shotton's phone, which seems to be Shotton at Aylesbury Road flat, as Atkins and Pereira are making their way home. The text message recovered from Shotton's phone, which he'd sent to Atkins, was saying, "You better have my money when you get home." Further CCTV footage from around noon showed Atkins and Pereira heading towards Cash Creators arm in arm, where they sold a soldering kit and a glue gun to the shop, formerly thought to be Shotton's property. Atkins was wearing a large wrist support on his right hand that covered most of his hand and halfway up his forearm. On his left wrist there was a clear tape holding a small dark patch in place, and he had plasters on fingers on his left hand. The couple were both wearing different clothing from the earlier CCTV that day. Police believe that they'd killed Shotton earlier. The couple stroll around the Boscombe area and return home, being caught again on CCTV at around 4 p.m. when again there's a change of clothing. This is when the couple go to Cash Creators and sell Shotton's phone for £15. Another CCTV shows the couple going to Sovereign Centre and to Wilco. One of them steals a hacksaw. Both Atkins and Pereira were experienced shoplifters. Pereira was walking awkwardly when she left Wilco, not moving her arm and leaning slightly to one side, possibly concealing the stolen hacksaw. Ironically, that week, Wilco went into receivership after 90 years of trading. In the next CCTV clip, Atkins can be seen with the hacksaw under his arm, and later footage shows it dangling from the handlebar of his pushbike. The type of hacksaw sold by Wilco was identified as a type of tool that was used to dismember the body of Mr. Shotton. Later that day, on the 19th of August, a neighbour, Mr. Glover, who lived next door to 18 Aylesbury Road, reported a bonfire at number 18 with an awful putrid smell of burning flesh. Mr. Glover said he shouted over the fence to Atkins, "What the fuck are you burning?" Atkins told them they'd found a dead fox with a pigeon in its mouth in the garden, and that they were cremating it. Mr. Glover did not believe him, as a fox would not be eating a pigeon if it was dying. Police thought that Atkins had been burning Shotton's head and clothes. Neighbours said that a bonfire had been burning in Atkins' garden between the 27th and 31st of August 2023. They said they also noticed in the past few months a stream of dishevelled, scruffy people coming and going from the flat at 18B. Mr. Glover and other neighbours thought that they were drug users. After the arrests, police carried out forensic examinations at 18B Aylesbury Road. In the utility room, there was evidence of a large quantity of blood that had been diluted with water while being cleared up. Droplets were found on the washing machine, on grouting behind the sink, on a radiator, on the carpet, and so on. Police said that the flat was so small that Pereira must have known that Atkins were dismembering a body in the utility room. During late August, Atkins had asked Mr. Glover if he could borrow some magnolia paint, as Atkins' nephew had been drawing on the walls and he wanted to paint over the drawing. Police thought it was to cover the blood staining. There was evidence of new decoration. Magnolia paint was painted in a sporadic and haphazard fashion, and the words "I love you" had been painted on one of the walls. These were bloodstains identified, which had been partly obscured by paint, which suggests that the paint was simply used to cover the blood. On September 2023 at Bournemouth Crown Court, both Atkins and Pereira were charged with murder. During the hearing by video link, both Atkins and Pereira made "I love you" signs to each other. There was a preliminary hearing at Crown Court on October 20th, 2023, when Atkins made a clear admission that he'd killed Shotton and dismembered and disposed of his body. So, to summarise, as reported, Simon Shotton's remains were found in the Boscombe area during the summer 2023. His legs were found at Manor Step Zigzag off Boscombe Overcliff Drive on August 26th. His arms were found at the defendant's That's Pereira and Atkins' home address in Aylesbury Road, Boscombe, on September the 2nd. And the headless torso was found in Boscombe Chine Gardens on September the 6th. At a court hearing on February the 16th of that year, Atkins admitted to burning Mr. Shotton's head and disposing of fragments of it in Walpole Lane in Boscombe. A search was carried out in Walpole Lane on February the 28th, and skull fragments were discovered. It seems that Atkins had killed Shotton, dismembered the body, dumped the body parts in the near neighbourhood, and burnt other body parts and Shotton's clothing. Didn't seem much of a plan if he was going to avoid arrest. Atkins was preparing a defence, which he presented in a defence statement on February the 18th, 2024. He was claiming self-defence after he was attacked by Simon Shotton. He managed to get a bread knife from Shotton, although wounding both his hands in the struggle. Shotton had cocaine and heroin in his system when he was killed. Atkins' statement was a possible scenario which could have occurred. So although having the other charges against him, Atkins was denying murder. Although there was no mention of a bread knife being found. The court case started at Winchester Crown Court on the 11th of April 2024 and is forecast to go on for a few weeks. I think the case will be quite straightforward, but if there's any unusual developments, I'll post another podcast when the case finishes, which will probably be late May, early June. Well, so ends another podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'd like to thank Damselfly for the background music, and until next time, I'll say goodbye.